Welcome, listeners, back once again to Food Conversations Season 5. Before we begin, of course, we once again acknowledge that we are living and working on the ancestral, unceded, and essentially stolen lands of the Shkrepik people, and that fairly resolving this situation is an ongoing responsibility for us all. Now, today we are delighted to welcome into the studio a hardworking farmer, Tony van den Tillert, owner of Fieldstone Organics. As you will learn, Tony, along with his friend and business partner, Willem Rohl, has developed an absolutely unique and very successful growing operation in nearby Armstrong that reaches back into ancient history and faraway lands to bring us grains that were temporarily forgotten in the rush to develop industrial grain and flour products, but are now making a strong comeback because of their unique natural and beneficial properties. Welcome, Tony, to Food Conversations.
Thanks for having me.
Delighted to have you here. And I think our listeners are going to learn a lot about how ancient times and modern times work well together. Now, we conventionally think of a pioneer as someone who goes off into uncharted territory and begins something new. But your pioneering work is very different. It's going back to the roots of human agriculture and growing and sharing plants that were central to the origins of human civilization. Grains like khorasan, emmer, einkorn, spelt, and quinoa, names that are now becoming familiar again as we reacquaint ourselves, with your help and the help of others like you, with their unique and healthful properties. Now, when you were growing up as a kid in Armstrong and Deep Creek, did you know or think about any of these ancient, you know, things that went on in human civilizations long ago, or was it just head down, hair straight back, and working and on the dairy farm that you grew up on?
Yeah, it was basically just hair straight back. Didn't know anything about ancient grains or even concerned about health at that time.
You were just enjoying life on a farm as much as you could when you weren't working.
That's correct.
So it was a dairy farm, and then you actually became a dairy farmer yourself.
Yes.
And can you remember when you first learned about this sort of magical world of grains that have come into our lives as humans and then kind of drifted away, and what that they were there even?
Well, it was back when I had left dairy farming and I had a lot of land to do something with. And so starting this little grain mill, I wanted to do something that was unique. And I always believed that the new modern stuff isn't always better. And that's how I really focused on ancient grains.
Do you remember when you first heard, or, I mean, obviously they're in the air, if you like, these days. But back when you were starting up, they weren't so well known to people. There was a little bag of, if I recall correctly, emmer that emerged into your life at some point, but when you sort of started to get involved.
Yes, and that emmer is unique in that it's a real nutty flavor, and it is a really old grain, so it's low in gluten. And so I grew a handful, or planted a little bag full, and then planted more and more, and now it is more accessible from other provinces, but we plant lots in our area also.
What was it like watching this grain that really was well known and popular 10, 12,000 years ago growing in your own yard?
Well, it was a challenge, and it was interesting, and it definitely became popular, but it took time.
Sure. Yeah, and going from the dairy industry to growing grains like this and selling directly to the public, you don't have the quota system that's part of the dairy world. So you had to kind of change gears a little bit when you started to grow this kind of stuff and bring it into the public marketplace.
Yes, the biggest thing with the quota system, you don't have to worry about marketing, but
you just prepare the milk and milk the cows, and away it goes.
Yeah, you just concentrate on making as much milk as you can. But in this industry, it's really, you've got to get out there and let people know what you have, and it's been very successful. People do want to know.
They are, and I sense, and we talked about this before, about the fact that there's a changing attitude that people have towards food, and it got a little bit of a boost from the pandemic as well, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. When you were doing dairy farming, you used a word to describe what you did. You used the word meticulous. Why don't you describe what that means on a sort of day-to-day basis?
In my dairy farming operation, well, I tried to do the best job I could, and it wasn't always the easiest. You tried to do the best you could for your cows, because if they were not looked after, they wouldn't look after you. So for an example, my cows had rubber floors, pillows they laid on, automatic alley scrapers. It all took time to get there. Mm-hmm. But you basically concentrate on trying to do the best job you can for animal health.
And you're bringing in values more than just profit into the work you're doing. Obviously, you do it because you think it's an important thing to do, not because it's, you know, going to increase your profit margin exponentially. It's doing the right thing.
It is. And then, you know, the bottom line is you look after the cows, they look after you.
With antibiotics, you were saying that you didn't. Antibiotics are used in some some animal operations as growth enhancers, but you didn't use them that way. You only used them when there was an animal that was ill and needed special treatment.
Yeah, I was a bit of a miser when it came to antibiotics.
Thank you for being a miser.
I did not believe in just doing what the sort of the model says you should do.
Well, there's a lesson there for my profession as physicians. Don't throw the antibiotics around. Now, Fieldstone began with spelt. There's a spelt story that started with some other folks, but on your property. Describe how that began, Tony.
I think people just realize that there is a little bit of a market for an ancient product. And spelt was sort of the common one that everybody knew about. And so that was kind of what they specialized in.
So you had some folks who were, I think, renting them space on your property.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And I grew a lot of spelt for them at that time.
Mm. And they kind of moved on, and you bought them out.
That's correct, yes.
And then what happened? Then the world took off.
Well, it wasn't all easy. It did take a lot of energy for about the first 7, 8, 9 years.
Yeah.
Just to get known and to be persistent. And with the right people and staff, it takes time to build a team. And with the right team, things started moving.
And this was organic. At this point, you were organic.
Yes, everything we do is 100% certified organic.
Were the people growing spelt on your property, were they organic as well?
Yes, and I was actually growing the spelt, not them.
Okay, yeah. So right at the beginning, you were doing organic growing. Was that something that really mattered to you? I mean, obviously it matters to a lot of people now, but you were a bit of a forerunner of a lot of that.
Yeah, one of my partners in life was really keen on eating healthy, and that I learned a lot from that.
And and you're sharing with others, obviously. Now, let's just get a few parameters straight. How big is the property that you own, and how do you extend the property that's growing stuff through other farmers?
Well, I have a fairly large chunk of property, and there's about 380 acres under cultivation. But from that, I rent some land, and I put that land onto my certification. And so that's how we can expand. I now work with another farmer who has some younger sons that do the farming, so I'm no longer out there on the tractor all the time. I get to do wonderful things like pick rocks.
Yes, that's where the name Fieldstone came from. It's a pretty evocative name.
Yeah. No, not really, but anyway,
Where did it come from?
Well, it was probably, yeah, that goes back a long ways. It was just because I think all farmers deal with rocks. And in the olden days, I think farmers tended to farm around rocks more than remove them because they didn't have the equipment and
the dynamite.
Yeah. And whatever it takes to do that.
Yeah. Just to remind listeners that I'm talking this morning with Tony van der Tillert, who is the owner of Fieldstone Organics. Tony, when you weren't picking rocks, you were obviously expanding the cultivation of other grains. When you went from spelt to emmer, what came next in the sequence of expanding to other grains?
Well, icorn was one that we were really keen on. It was a tougher one for our area, but we did grow some. Mm-hmm. And of course, with all of our grains, we try and plant some legumes also because we've got to crop rotate and stuff
sure.
like that. So, but, you know, einkorn, emmer, corazon wheat, spelt, flax, there's an amazing amount of flax comes into this country from China, and it's certified organic.
Huh.
So Fieldstone's policy is that we only buy from three provinces. BC first, we will go to Alberta, and we will go to Saskatchewan. If we can't get it, we don't sell it.
So you buy Canadian
yes.
products as much as yes. possible, and especially flax?
Well, we grow our own flax, right. or it's grown in the prairies.
Yeah, that's for sure.
In the past, we've had, you know, experiences where I tried growing, for instance, chia, and I grew beautiful plants, but I could never get them to seed. And so after 2 years, we gave up on that idea. And so we don't sell chia because we can only get it from out of the country. And somebody else can do that.
Sure. Well,
at least we know ours is certified.
Indeed. Indeed you do. Now, all together with your farm and the acreage you have under cultivation on your farm and the other farms together, what would the total be, would you say, roughly?
Well, that is an impossible question.
I like impossible questions.
There is the type of year you could have very poor yields and sometimes really good yields. Right. We deal with other growers. I visited a farm in Alberta, southern Alberta, that had 8,000 acres. Very dry land. You could almost walk through the crop without damaging it. But they grow a lot of organic grains. So the acreage is really difficult to pin down.
You know, it's interesting. I heard that Saskatchewan is the province in Canada that uses the most pesticides and has the most organic growing activity in the country, which is a strange mix. Obviously, there's a lot of big farms, you know, multiple sections with, you know, they spray pretty freely. And then there's also a lot of people who take growing very seriously and grow organically, which is kind of the state of the world today.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Half of the people think it's cheap food that matters, and half of the people or a growing proportion are starting to think that healthy food is more important than cheap. So you market. Now marketing is a whole process of its own. How do you do that? How is your team engaged in telling the world about what you're doing and where you can get it? I know that you have your website is about to be refreshed. There's a big sign across the top that says, new website coming up, come back soon. Talk about the marketing side.
Well, that is more difficult for me to talk about because the office handles that. But we do have somebody on staff that does our social media.
Right.
And a lot of it is done through social media. A lot of it is the website, of course. We got
it's a beautiful website too.
Recipes and everything on it, and they put a lot of energy into it, and they're very good at it.
So, and there's a lot of description about why you grow things the way you do, and what you and why you grow what you grow. You know what the reason is. It's not just random. It's for a specific purpose: good quality, safe food, clean food, that kind of thing.
Yes, they are very well. They believe in what they're doing, and that's probably what you're seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. It comes through very strongly on the website. How many people now are working as part of your team? It's obviously, it has to be a team effort because there's so many different facets of what you're doing.
Well, that comes and goes a little bit, but basically there's 10 people involved. And some are part-time, some are almost full-time, but they're still considered part-time. And others are full-time.
Do you eat your own grains?
Oh, absolutely.
So, yes. See, that wasn't a trick question. I knew the answer before I asked. Describe how you would prepare breakfast from, say, one of your... What's your favorite grain, and how do you prepare it for breakfast? Because it's a little bit... It's the way people are starting to do things now.
Well, mine's a mixture. It's not just one grain. I put in a little bit of... Or I take some barley. I take some black lentils. I take some einkorn. I take some buckwheat. I take some flax.
All grown in your own property.
And then I mix, or I put on some oats, and then I soak that for 24 hours. And I soak it on the open counter. And then the next morning, I mix that with a whole bunch of other things because I grow lots of berries and stuff like that I freeze for the winter, watermelons, cantaloupe, that type of stuff. And then I mix that all together, and that's my breakfast.
Doesn't it give you a pretty clear sense of satisfaction to see what's in the bowl has all come from your own place, your own property?
Yeah, it does. And I shouldn't say all, because, of course, I do buy some cinnamon and cayenne pepper and that type of stuff.
Yeah, we don't grow cayenne in this part of the world, do we? No. Now, spelt is, I mean, unusually in terms of your whole range of growing, is a relative newcomer. It's only been around for 5,000 years. But most of your grains are much older. I thought we could just go through each one, and you could maybe give a bit of a rundown of the properties of the grain in question. Now, Emmer, that's the little bag of seed that you started out with. What is unique about Emmer and makes it a special grain?
Well, it's, for me, it's I like the flavor. It's a very nutty flavor. It's a very small kernel, and Emmer is also grown in, it's like spelt. They're not all ancient grains are, but they are. They're grown. Let's see. So einkorn and spelt are grown in a what I call a suit of armor. They got a shell on them.
Okay.
And see, these ancient grains didn't pick up diseases as easy as our modern naked grains.
Yes.
And that, but we can spray for that, so we don't have to.
So you have to de-hull them at some point.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Emmer's got. By the way, it was the food of the pharaohs, the ancient Egypt. It was the main grain in ancient Egypt.
Yes, and emmer actually doesn't have a hull.
It doesn't.
Einkorn does.
Okay.
And so does spelt. But there are a few that don't.
And it also, if I understand correctly, it doesn't need rich soil. It can grow fairly well on a variety of different not-so-rich soils.
Well, you don't get nothing for nothing. So it always works better to have your soil up to snuff.
Right.
But one of the things we have noticed, a lot of the ancient grains haven't been bred to have short stalks, so you get a lot of straw. And sometimes in light, sandier soil, you keep working that straw into the ground and you really build up your organic matter in the soil.
That's interesting.
Which really helps.
For sure.
Preserving moisture and, of course, giving back to plants.
Now, it's also said to be quite resistant to fungal diseases. Has that been your experience?
Well, we do crop rotate to try to avoid that. In fact, you pretty well have to rotate every year. I can't plant emmer.
No.
You might get away with it for 2 years if you have a good excuse, and they might, the certifying body might let you do it, but right. Normally you wouldn't, and you don't for your own reasons.
And rotation is really central to organic growing. It's one of the features that all organic growers get to understand well. Why don't you talk a little bit about rotation and how it plays a role and how you have to do it to make things go well?
Well, some of your plants are more nitrogen fixing. So if you have grains for 3 or 4 years, we really recommend that you put in something else, flax, lentils, peas.
Lentils in particular, legumes in particular, put nitrogen back into the
yes.
soil.
And it changes anything disease or bacteria would want to live on. These don't count.
Yeah,
it's a whole different.
Suddenly somebody took away lunch and they're being fed a snack that they don't want to eat, which is very good for the plants. Yeah,
that's correct, yeah.
I remind listeners once again that I'm talking with Tony Vanden Tillert, who is the owner of Fieldstone Organics, a unique operation growing ancient grains in the 21st century. It's something which I think the entire community is grateful for. So that's emmer with its particular properties. Now, einkorn, the word in German means one seed, and it's almost like the primordial original grain that we humans figured out how to grow. Now, domestic einkorn is different from wild einkorn in that the seed heads stay together, they hold together, and the wild one shatters and scatters seed, which is better for growing new plants. You grow domestic einkorn. It started out, I believe, in Turkey about 12,000 years ago. It's self-pollinating. Now, that's not a quality that's found in all grains, is it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that means that you don't have to worry about other strains kind of infiltrating and altering the quality or the nature of the plant.
That's correct. And einkorn is also in a hull, so the seed's protected.
What's the fundamental difference in terms of growing? Is that hull sort of a really important line of defense against, well, disease? Birds.
That's the belief, yeah, for lots of things.
Yeah,
bugs, aphids, a lot of that stuff. Einkorn is a very old, the oldest grain we deal with, and it is a little more difficult to get volume. That's why it costs more. But on the other hand, it's very high in protein.
Indeed.
It's some of the highest grain we've seen. So it's a little bit like
22-24%, something like that, as I recall. Yeah.
21-22.
It can also grow in a cooler. It can tolerate coolness better than some of the other grains.
Yeah, my success with it hasn't been wonderful. I've grown it, and it's great, but, you know, there's other things I can grow better.
Why do you put on your cereal? You said you add a little einkorn.
Just because of the protein.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's your protein shake.
Well, it's all part of it. So are the black lentils.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. It is said to have more protein and also more fat, which is interesting. Grains are not known to have a high fat content. I guess that's the germ, the wheat germ portion, but they have a higher fat content than some of the other grains.
Yeah.
Einkorn.
And it's a very tiny kernel.
Is it?
Yes.
Does that mean you have to do any special processing tricks to make sure that it's handled well?
Yeah, well, you want to handle it. In some cases, it's like handling gold, so you don't want to waste any. But the guys in the plant know what they're doing, and they make sure the screens are the right size
to fine,
do what they do.
So let's talk about Khorasan. Khorasan is interesting because a lot of people have heard of Kamut. And Kamut is the brand name that was used by a gent in Montana, Bob Dixon, in the 1990s. He sort of started it up. But it turns out that Kamut is the ancient Egyptian name for wheat. So it was an interesting choice of brand name. I did a little research and found out all these interesting facts. My first interest before medicine, long before medicine, was archaeology. I was interested in how we humans did things a long, long time ago. And with Khorasan, there's just an incredible link to this ancient world that all of our ancestors were wobbling around in. It's also a grain that is quite drought tolerant. In fact, it doesn't like rain, according to the sources I read. What's your experience been?
I find it actually doesn't mind moisture neither.
We don't have too much for it then in this part of the world.
Well, one year I had a beautiful crop and it started raining and it rained for a month. And it was actually germinating standing there. So that was not good.
You were sprouting grain right on the
right
vine.
On the stalk, yeah.
Yeah, but it's... Of the ones that we've talked about so far, which is the easiest to grow in this part of the world?
We'll see, some of them are fall... Like, if you have perfect conditions,
which
fall
you never
spelt
have.
is wonderful.
Okay.
Spring spelt, yeah, it can do well too, but I prefer fall spelt. Mm. Khorasan, I don't mind growing that at all. But you, again, last year we had such a cold, wet spring, and then we have to deal with weed control.
Mm.
So far this year has been perfect. We had fantastic rains. The seeds bounced out of the ground, and the weeds, they're not even showing up because it's too dry for them. And yet the roots from the grain are going down into the moisture.
The hardy native perennials have had to take a back seat,
yeah,
to the imports. Well, let's talk a little bit about spelt. Spelt is where you got started in the grain growing world. And it was brought to you by others, but you're growing quite a bit of it now.
Yes. Well, it's big demand.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a big demand for it.
Now, spelt is a pretty rich source of protein and fiber as well, and has this property of its gluten. Its gluten is somewhat lower in amount, but it's also more soluble. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about gluten and these grains and their role in allowing people to sometimes eat food with gluten in it and not have an adverse reaction.
Well, I think all the ancient grains have less gluten, starting with einkorn, emmer, and moving up the chain. Spelt probably has the most of the ancient grains, but it's quite digestible. The biggest downside to this is it's tougher to bake with. You can hear people that love to bake bread, they get frustrated because they don't get these nice, big, fluffy loaves.
And they get solid loaves.
Yes.
Yeah, with solid nutritional value. Yeah, I guess there's something to be said, I suppose, for fluff, but not as much as you'd say for quality.
Well, and I think a lot of the modern grains have been designed to really... You know, you can poof up a great big loaf of bread from a little tiny bit of dough. And so,
you know, I'm not a great bread baker, but I made some banana bread with Khorasan, and it was wonderful. It rose appropriately with a little baking powder, etc. But it was also very, very tasty. It had a very attractive flavor. Is that another feature of some of the grains you're growing, that they give you a variety of flavor? There's a nutty flavor to some of them. There's just a different range of flavors.
Yes, and we do get bakers that will mix grains. I remember getting a loaf of bread in the mail, so it was made quite a while ago, but it was Khorasan, I believe, and spelt, and it was absolutely delicious. Mm. and another baker was dealing with emmer bread, and he had the littlest loaves, and I stopped to get some. And he says, oh, it's sold out a long time ago. If you want this stuff, you need to...
Was this Marcus Yeager by any chance?
No, this place was in Summerlin.
Oh, really? All right. Yeah. So there's other people who are really catching on to this use of other kinds of grains.
I think they get customers that's what they want. And so
they feed the customer.
Yes.
Well, it is also something that people who are not very tolerant of the fluffy, gluten-rich bread can actually be able to eat. And I think that's something, especially there's a lot of talk these days about gluten and its role in, you know, digestive upsets. And when you have bread that's tolerated, it's a door for people to go through to enjoy some bread again, but without worrying about that particular aspect of it.
Yes, and I think if somebody's gluten intolerant, they'd have to be careful. But we have had lots of people say they have no issues with the ancient grains, but regular bread they can't. And of course, we sell hard red spring wheat and all of that kind of stuff. It's all certified organic. But I kind of think that hard red spring wheat is a little bit like a pig with lipstick because it's still got all the gluten and everything in it. It's just organic.
Yes, organic lipstick. Spelt is... catch has caught on fairly well. What's the trend that you see in terms of people looking for and wanting and buying spelt and the other grains as well? What's the pattern that you see?
Well, I see it's been growing steady, and I think it's like anything. You're friends talk to each other and they really are enjoying ancient grains, mm-hmm. and so they talk to other people. And it's amazing how we'll get, say, a group come down from up north and they'll buy for all their neighbors and everybody because of shipping, and then they
drive it back.
They drive it back and divvy it out.
So you're seeing people come from here, there, and everywhere. It's not just local people who are buying.
No, it's definitely from everywhere.
Tell me about Korea.
There's just, if we have excess grain, it seems like, and in particular Corazon wheat, then they really want it.
Do you have any idea why? I mean, it started in the Middle East, you know, the Fertile Crescent,
yeah,
et cetera.
I think just because there is probably the elite people there can, you know, are focused in on having the taste,
yeah,
maybe the ability to use it.
A lot of people talking to a lot of other people.
Yeah, and they're not, like, we've had conversations with people from India and we've shipped stuff to New Zealand.
Hmm.
So they're not the only country, but definitely they never say no if we have extra.
Where do you sell the most? I mean, obviously there's a lot of local sales, people in the area who know about you and buy from you. But where does it mostly go to?
Mostly it is kind of local. The further we get away from British Columbia, it tapers off because of the cost of shipping.
Right.
The bulk sales are fairly big, but that mostly stays within British Columbia. Not all. Like, we do ship some big loads to Ontario, Quebec, that type of thing. Somebody there knows what they want, and so they'll order it, and yeah.
In terms of how much you can sell or how much demand there is, are you able to keep up with the demand, or is the demand now exceeding what you can produce, so you know other people are going to have to supply some of the market as well?
Well, we keep trying to get as much product as we can. So far, we've never had to worry about having too much of something. You might one year, But then we organize the farmers what to grow. The beautiful thing about grains is they keep. So if we had a super good year and we have an abundance of something, then we manage the farmers to grow more of something else that we're probably short of.
And when you store, why don't you tell listeners about diatomaceous earth?
Well, it's a, we mix that in with our grains, all grains that come in, raw products, just for bug control. And of course, our cleaning equipment takes that out when it goes through the plant.
It's a fascinating use of the shells of dead plankton in the ocean that diatomaceous earth is, because it's perfectly safe, even if there was some left on the food, it's perfectly safe to consume.
Yes.
But it's it plays a central role in organic food, especially with storage.
Yes, because it's kind of like little razor blades that little bugs can't tolerate.
No, they think they're eating something good, and then, unfortunately, the razor blade part comes into play.
And it's perfect, like you say, it's perfectly safe. We're not allowed to use chemicals anyway, so.
Yeah, I see a trend. As a physician, I see a trend towards people buying organic food that's quite strong and starting to understand the cost differential. The price differential is a result of the cost differential. When you produce organic food, there's more, it costs a little bit more to get it out to retail.
Yes, absolutely. But hopefully if you're buying some ancient grain that's 20-some% protein, you don't need as much of it.
You could be in the marketing department. Now let's talk about the one grain that doesn't come from the Fertile Crescent and ancient Europe and the Middle East. That's quinoa. And quinoa is a very different kind of grain. It's becoming increasingly popular. But it comes from a different place. Why don't you talk about its origin and sort of its plant relationships?
Well, quinoa for us has been something we haven't been successful growing. We used to have it because we could get it from northern Saskatchewan. And that farmer quit doing it. And so we've never been able to source it since.
Really?
Apparently it needs to have these threatening nights to set it into seed.
The cold nights?
The cold nights and yet not kill it. Huh. That was the problem, you know, with chia. It was much the same. But my threatening cold killed it completely. Like it was a beautiful warm fall and then all of a sudden 20 below.
Bang.
And it wasn't going to set seed after that. And it wasn't going to set it before that. It needed to be threatened a little bit.
Tickle it.
Yeah. So those are some of the issues with
quinoa.
Yeah. And there are perfectly good people that can grow it, just not in our area where we can bring it in.
So speaking of our area, what are, of all the grains you're growing, what are the ones that seem to be really well suited to this part of the world? Some of the crops you're growing are cold tolerant, some are heat tolerant, some are moisture tolerant, some are drought tolerant. What seems to work fairly consistently well in this part of the world?
Well, if you go in, like growing organically, if you grow hard red spring wheat, that's a pretty easy crop to grow. So is barley, very simple crop to grow. But we can only use so much of that. Plus, we don't want to use up too much land growing that when we need the ancient grains.
I'm just going to remind listeners that I'm speaking this morning with Tony Van Den Tillert, who is the owner of Fieldstone Organics. Tony, there's clearly a trend towards people wanting to buy for food quality as opposed to simply price point. They're not just buying stuff that's inexpensive without thinking about what the quality of the food is that they're buying. In that trend, how do you see what's going on at Fieldstone? Is things are expanding, the market is drawing. You can't supply now all of the people who want some of the grains that you're producing. That obviously augurs well for the future of your operation. What about expanding what you do? That's not an easy thing to do with a farm. You have to do it right. You have to do it with the right people and that kind of thing. Do you see any options opening up for broadening your production and increasing volume without sacrificing the values that are so important to what you're doing as well?
Well, the values are hard to sacrifice because we are so regulated and we're really policed. Mm. And so that's a good thing because then the consumer knows they're getting what they pay for. As far as expanding goes, we always get new growers that want to come on board. If you've got land that was farmed conventionally, there's a three-year waiting list of no restricted products.
Right.
Have to clear it. Other people, we just had a large farm towards Kamloops that was carved out of the sagebrush and the bush and put irrigation in, and according to this guy, his wife wants him to farm organically. So that's good for us.
Yes.
And
Is he listening to his wife, as far as you know?
As far as we know, and he's no fool neither. I think he knows well, but he's given his wife the credit for it.
As it should be. So there's an expanding, there's a sense of expansion in this area. It's not a shrinking area of food production.
That's correct. Yeah. And there's lots of competition.
Well, that's if you do it well, you'll...
But there's competition with grapes. There's competition with cherry trees. Lots of berries now, nuts.
And grains have a unique quality. You mentioned it earlier. You can store them. And they can... And that's, in fact, how we started to live. It's called the Agricultural Revolution, about 8,000 BC, was based on the fact that grains could be stored. You could stay in one place. You didn't have to keep foraging and going farther afield. You know, go to one part of the world in the spring and another part of the world in the fall. You could stay in one place, establish a city or a community, and grains were the basis of it, the so-called staff of life. So let's talk about something that had a significant influence on sales for you, and that is the pandemic. The pandemic was noted, duly noted by many people, but for Fieldstone, it had a significant impact on what you were selling to the public. What was that like?
Well, I think we just became extremely busy.
And that's a good sign.
Yes, and I think it was people wanting to be more conscious of what they're eating. I don't know how else to describe that. Health mattered to them. And I'm not sure we all thought about that earlier.
Well, there's maybe a sense that we're just on this ongoing romp through life and there's no thought to the future and sometimes our own bodies. If something tasted good, that was what mattered. I must admit, now when I see vegetables that look too perfect, makes me a bit nervous. I think there's probably something, some monkey business has gone on to make them that way. What specific effects did it have on sales? I know that, and we'll talk about that in a moment, you sell grinders and little mills and as well as other kind of flakers that can make rolled oats out of oats and other grains as well. What happened there when the pandemic hit?
Well, we had a pretty good inventory and it was basically gone within days. And we've been behind ever since. I think we're getting a few in stock now, but they became very popular. And it could be that people had to stay home and they had time, so then they were into baking and maybe doing stuff in their house. But definitely the trend has still been going up.
You sell grinders, and there's a specific reason that you sell them, and that's because the fresher the grain that you've ground or flaked, the more its nutritional value is secure. Why don't you talk about that a bit?
Well, apparently a kernel of grain will start to oxidize within 2 hours after you break it. And because we're not believing that putting preservatives in food is a good thing, because if the outside bugs aren't supposed to eat it, why should your body? And so we've always just sold whole grains. And so it's natural we'd want to sell grinders for people that want to do that in their own home.
Sure. You have quite a line of grinders, like from very tiny up to fairly skookum models.
Well, we try and bring in stuff for every budget. I know some of them are very classy and very nice, and then there's other ones that are just very
small,
doable
countertop versions of that. Yeah. What you have one line in particular, I don't recall the name, but that you sell a lot of. Is that a line that you came to know for some particular reason, that its quality is good? Or
yeah, we started off with doing some research, and we settled on this brand called Como. It's made in Germany. We could not find a product with that quality made locally, and we've sold a lot of them. And when we first started selling them, and I don't know what it is today, but they had 12 years warranty. I can't buy a piece of steel and get 12 years warranty.
You can't buy a car, for sure. What attracted you to this particular brand? What was it that made it clear that this was one you wanted to
sell?
Well,
it just seemed very high-end, and with that kind of warranty, you're not going to warranty it if it was a pile of junk.
Sure.
And it's a very classy-looking, it's made out of beech wood. And so it's something you can leave on your counter. Ideally, you'd use it every day or several times a day, so you don't want to be hauling it in and out of the cupboard.
Sure.
So this would look...
It would look
like,
good.
Yeah, it looks good sitting there.
You see my unique furniture on the counter.
Yeah.
And with the flakers, describe how a flaker works. I mean, obviously you're doing what you buy in the store, but you're doing it in your own kitchen.
Yeah, you just throw it in and either you...
As a roller inside?
There's two rollers, and it just squeezes it.
And flattens it out.
Flattens it out. And there's adjustments on them, so you can make it flatter or not as flat. Some are hand cranks. Those are the cheaper ones. Others are electric.
Mm-hmm.
And
away you go.
Away you go.
Huh. Yeah. The impact of COVID also was felt in your sale of grains. But how did that change when the pandemic came along?
Oh, we got real busy. The biggest thing was keeping up. But you know, it's been really good. Now, partly with grains, you can buy a bunch and you don't have to use it tomorrow. As long as you store it properly, it could sit there for 20 years. Mm. But the bottom line is it's a convenient thing to have on hand, the different grains.
And what kind of grains can you flake? Obviously, the ones everyone knows are things like barley and oats.
Well,
wheat.
So you can flake pretty well anything, but oats you just throw in the flaker. Flax, you can do that also. But if you wanted to do it with spelt and wheat and all that, you've just got to rinse them in water. You don't want them to soak it up, but you leave them, rinse them in water, put them on a towel so they dry a little bit, and then you can get flakes from them.
Hmm. Hmm. Do you find, which do you sell more of, the grinders or the flakers?
Probably the grinder.
Okay.
Grinders. I know my niece's little kids, it was like candy if they got a little bag of flaked oats. They would just...
I tell you, the way things are changing in the world, it's very good to see. It's good to see that people are going for healthy, local food made by somebody they know. You know, it's one thing to have something come from Maple Leaf Foods in faraway Ontario and wonder if something went wrong, would you know later or sooner? Whereas here, obviously the interest of the grower is that you are satisfied with the product, and they're your neighbors. So it's a whole different kind of relationship. Now, one of the things you said was that for the future, one of the things you'd like to do is travel more and see other cultures. I sort of imagine you going around the world looking at, I wonder how they grow their grain here. Or is that me projecting into what you would like to learn about other cultures?
Well, I think once a farmer, always a farmer, and you love to see what other countries do, other cultures. Some of them are blessed with a really good labor force. Others aren't. So, you know, a lot of our really good organic farming equipment comes from Europe. And
they take it seriously.
Yes. They take it seriously to have less chemicals.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Somebody once pointed out that the first meter of soil in many parts of Europe is so saturated with nitrogen fertilizers that it's usable, but it's heavily contaminated, and that's simply just decade after decade of using soluble nitrogen fertilizer, which is actually obtained from the nitrogen in the atmosphere. There's a chemical process that draws it out of the atmosphere, which was developed in Germany. So it's been going on for a long time, and it's probably time for us to start rethinking things. When you've been using grains that come not only from far away, but also from a long time ago, has that ever sort of stimulated your imagination, thinking, well, gosh, there's a lot of variety of stuff around here, and gee, there's lots of different ways to do this, and I wonder what secrets Mother Nature has locked in for us to unlock at some point?
There is lots of sort of challenges out there with new grains, different grains. People come to us and ask if we have this. We kind of have to draw in our reins once in a while and concentrate on what we're doing. For a small bit of market, as much as it would be fun, we still have to concentrate on the main picture first. And then we will dip into these other ones.
It strikes me that growing everything organically is a really important part of what you do, that it's sort of a central theme that runs through all of the products, food products you produce.
Yes. Well, everything we deal with is certified organic. Otherwise, we don't handle it.
Do you find that it's hard now for yourself and people you know and love, that eating food that isn't organically raised sort of sends off a bit of an alarm in your mind? I mean, we have to sometimes.
I know. I realize that. And I'm not going to upset the apple cart. If I'm at somebody's place and they're good enough to invite me for dinner, great. I'm going to eat it.
Absolutely.
I can choose to stay away from some of the fast food joints.
You can.
And fast food coffee shops and that type of stuff. That I can make a decision, and I'm not insulting anybody.
What's interesting is that there are now coffee shops and sort of fast food places that also embody the same principle that you're using in growing. They make a point of saying we're most of the stuff we serve here is organic.
Well, the fastest growing market in the food industry is organic.
Indeed.
And everybody wants a piece of that. And some of them are doing it more as a lip service. Others are really getting serious about it.
Sure.
I've heard lots of people say, well, we do it just like organics. Well, that's not true. And I've questioned them, and then you know how far out they are.
Do you find the Canadian organic rules are good?
Yes. I think the Canadian ones are really good. I think all I know is they're sure meticulous with us.
They're picky.
They're very picky. And they come out and they spend hours and hours and hours walking my fields, asking questions. It's a huge paper trail, and they better all line up because that's important.
It is. And you mentioned that a small percentage of people buy your grains that are not focused on the organic side, but because there's traceability and quality control throughout the entire process of producing.
Yes, grains. And for them, it's mostly traceability.
Yeah.
That they need a BC product in order to get the tax break from the BC government. And so in some cases, we fill that niche.
But 99% of people, they want them because they are organic and they appreciate
that. That's correct. Yeah. And with our small packaging growing so much, we just cut back on the bulk side and serve the small consumer.
Sure.
It's very important for us.
Yes, and the small consumer is just as alive as the large consumer, and sometimes even more so.
That's correct.
Tony, it's been wonderful talking with you today. Tony van der Tillert is the owner of Fieldstone Organics and somebody who has pioneered back into the past and is bringing us grains and other foods that our ancestors were proud enough to grow, and he is as well. And we're very happy to have you on the show to tell us all about it, Tony. Thank you very much for coming in today.
Well, thanks very much for having me.